it works.
Spanish Guerrero, good.
Against the English and the French.
Record. Record it.
Duff Hunt, McGeady, Whelan. None of them are left. Cause he's not our manager anymore.
Screw the podcast, let's just record this.
An album of sad songs that Trap left.
Trap, 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 trap!
Podcast coming at you for another wonderful, miserable, we didn't make it into the world. Things are crap. Anyway, Declan Maron's over there.
Howdy.
Ruth Holman's over there. We're going to do our best to sound happy and pleased for the next hour or so.
Right. Give it about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
If you want to get in touch, topbandpodcast@hotmail.com. Send us an email if you want. We might read it, we might not. Who knows? We're dejected at the moment.
Yeah.
On the Twitter, @12thmanpodcast, you want to drop us a line there. Declan Maron, we'll get back to you on that probably.
I will. I've been working away trying to impress all of the new random followers we picked up, so hello.
Hey, how are you?
Get over to @12thmanpodcast, please.
Yeah, and the Facebook page. On there, get on there, give it a like if you haven't already. But you should, definitely. Going to start with a question, as always, lads. We will get to Trapatonium, we will get to Guitar 2022, all of that will come in the next few minutes. But we're going to start with Kyle Walker, lads. It's the big one. The big one is Kyle Walker at the moment. Now, according to some reputable sources, lads, now I say that, I use that term loosely, reputable sources. Kyle Walker was caught inhaling hippie crack, as it's been put, from a black balloon, as it's been put. Now, I want to ask you lads, what's the stupidest thing you can remember a footballer doing off the pitch? Was that Ruth Holman this week?
Woohoo! Oh, mixing it up. I am not prepared for this at all. I usually just base my answer on Declan.
You better not have what I was hoping to say. I'm extremely annoyed and I'll be left with nothing.
I always remember when Glenn Johnson was playing for Chelsea and he was caught nicking a toilet seat out of B&Q. So yeah, I don't have anything else to say.
Just, I don't remember that at all.
It was like slander at the time.
Oh, we're gonna have to track that down. That'll be on the Facebook page if I can find it. Absolutely, an article on that. If not, I'll create one.
That's right in ourselves. Throw it into his Wikipedia page or something.
Yeah, just Photoshop a picture of a toilet seat in beside him. If he's holding like a Chelsea jersey or something, just put a toilet seat in there instead.
When he's playing for Liverpool, and just Photoshop poorly him holding a toilet seat. Look at him, that's when he was running away from the police there.
Wearing his full kit is stupid, they'll know who he is.
They'll know exactly who it is, it has his name on the back.
I did not know, I'd never heard that story. Or maybe he was just, you know, wanted a toilet seat. Really, really
maybe he just needed the loo, but very comfortably, really quickly.
I don't want to pay for this. I just have to use one of the show toilets. Lovely. Declan Maron, what's your answer?
Mine's a bit more of a well-known one. I think we all know this one. It's a Jonathan Woodgate classic.
Oh.
By the headline of Toon Ace Glasses His Head.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this before.
Yes, we have.
I have a question why he's called an ace, but all right.
Yeah, well, it was back when he was a relative ace at Newcastle. But yeah, that's not the big question here. The big question is why he glassed himself through. Now, I'll read you a few quotes that I've picked up here, right, from it. At one stage, he dropped his trousers. Then without warning, Woodgate broke a glass over his head. He walked out helped by his friends. This was in a club
in... Why did he drop his
trousers? I don't know. This was in a club in Spain. I think it was Ibiza. He was holding a shirt over his forehead trying to stop the blood gushing out. It looked a bad injury. Bouncers checked him out and he just wandered away. Like, he literally wandered off into the night. You know,
Absolutely.
And never came back.
Pantsless, probably
concussed. Actually naked, if his pants were down and his shirt was on his head.
True, yeah.
Just this naked, just bleeding wearing, Englishman
well,
walking around Spain.
No undies or something.
Well, that's what I mean, you know.
You probably have to walk off with, you know, when you have your trousers on your ankles, so you can't really move your legs.
Yeah.
You know what
I wonder, was it just a bit of, like, you know, everyone getting a kind of argy-bargy, a bit push and shove, and he's like, right, I'm going to break someone up, there's no one else but myself here, just, you know, cause a bit of drama, clattered himself with glass.
Oh, well, yeah, David Weir smashing ice cubes into his forehead, that's also quite ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's not your...
No, it's not, mine's much less entertaining than those two. I was thinking of, it's actually quite serious now that I think about, when, I'll say it now. Craig Bellamy playing for Liverpool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Craig Bellamy attacking John Anarisa with a golf club.
Back in Liverpool's Grand Theft Auto days.
Yeah. Attacking him, trying to break his ankles or something. Like, oh, what?
And he played in the next game they against Barcelona.
And scored.
And both of them scored.
Yeah.
And then they did that.
Worked.
Yeah.
Oh, how funny that was. Yeah. You just smacked the shit out of me with a golf club.
Yeah, mine's nowhere near as entertaining.
No, hats off to Rue. If yours is true, you've won it today. But
I remember from back when it happened. I remember reading that.
I love that.
It's quite a strange one.
Delicious. Moving on. Again, we'll get to Trapattoni and all that nonsense. But I want to talk about Qatar first, and the World Cup being held there. And that's a long, long way away. But Sepp Blatter's come out this week, and he's pretty much admitted that it's been a mistake of FIFA's part to host the tournament, or to try and host the tournament there, because it's inconceivable. Inconceivable to have the tournament on in the summer in Qatar in temperatures
50 degrees.
Yeah, 40-50 degrees. Okay, yeah, we want these air conditioned stadiums, but if top athletes can't do it, like can't function with that, I seriously doubt fans be able to function in that. So
good thing we haven't qualified then, because like Irish people certainly.
I mean, it is a long way away.
We are the palest people in the world, though.
Yeah, but it's not the next World Cup.
Yeah.
We may well be. Yeah.
True, but we
may well be world beaters.
On our way down, I suppose. So.
We'll probably just try not to qualify.
Yeah. that's too hot. No.
I know, we won't be qualifying that now.
Sorry, go on.
He's admitted this week it's been a mistake. And how can FIFA have such a massive oversight on their part to... How can they be so stubborn and say, no, we're going to have it here, and then a year on or 2 years on say, actually no, we can't have it there, we're going to have it in the winter instead, which seems to be the only plan that's in place at the moment, because Sepp Blatter said to the executive committee or whatever they're called in FIFA to find the solution to this problem. How could FIFA have done this?
He talked a bit about discriminating countries that have the different seasons that have different temperatures and weather and stuff like that. It's like, that's outrageous. I mean, you hardly deal with discrimination when it's like a serious issue, and yet you're talking about like, I don't discriminate against the sun, lads. It's like, look, it's too hot. It's as basic as you can make it. It's dangerously hot. I understand that risks have to be taken to beat discrimination, but let's pick and choose your battle, you know. Pick the right battle, the right one, not the wrong one.
This is a country that did openly discriminates against women and homosexuals as well. Yeah. It's like, yeah. You can't be discriminated against them because it's hot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, all right, well,
but as you're saying, this is a disaster for FIFA, really, and it's reinforced.
Another disaster.
Like, I mean, say, I don't know, I'm sure people have always had issues with FIFA, but going back, say, 10 years when we were kind of up and coming young football watchers, I don't remember even close to it.
He's a bit of a watching rookie, that lad.
But, you know, I don't remember even close to any kind of hullabaloo like this being made around FIFA. Now, I'm sure there's been controversies.
When the World Cup was held in Mexico, it was also too hot and they had to change the times a lot of the time.
But not on the same, like, I mean, if you think about it, this has been one disaster after another for FIFA. This isn't like, oh, they've kicked up a stir. It's like they're continuing to constantly have stir around them. You know, that's just outrageous that this can now...
They announced that and the Russia 2018 at the same time. Russia have kind of got away with this one because they have not similar problems. They also have problems in the sense that they... Visas to get in and out of the country is very difficult to get there, to get the matches. They've also, very similar to Qatar, they have... Like, no gay rights in place whatsoever. Yeah. They discriminate against, you know, gay people, as I said. They can be massively homophobic, and it's a big problem for FIFA, that alone. But they seem to be focused on Qatar and whether they're going to move to a winter. Do you think it's conceivable to move to a winter?
I suppose, like, it's doable. I'd prefer they didn't.
And is, you know, just winter 2022 or winter 2021?
Yeah.
Or what going way your way, like, go so past
this is the thing.
Whole,
I mean, it throws everything out of whack. And the fact that, like, there was no plan for this, clearly, when they picked it.
Yeah.
Which makes it, like...
No, it would have been hosted as normal. And
yeah,
then
yeah,
the whole thing came out.
Exactly. But, I mean, surely they should have known this. Was it,
yeah, well, I mean,
could
they,
have been an issue even going into it. And had a backup plan.
To do all these checks on stadiums where the infrastructure is there. Surely someone went to the country and went, it's a bit warm in here. Like, well, what time of year did they go, you know?
Yeah.
Like, did they go in January and went, actually, no, you can play this. Yeah. This is grand.
Not to go at midnight.
Or flight was cancelled. That was it. That was the one check they did. Maybe Chris Coleman was supposed to do the checks, but never brought a certain legal document.
Possibly, but unlikely. You see, if it does move to the winter, though, it affects 4 years worth of football.
Yeah,
essentially.
Like, yeah.
You mean you're gonna have to the season beforehand? You're gonna have to move everything around. And a very good argument I heard today by somebody on Sky Sports News was that. What's going to happen to the Champions League? UEFA won't that be moved around. If the World Cup's been held in November or October, November, don't forget, it's a month, it's a 5-week competition, as it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be 64 games or something like that. It's going to have at least a month preparation before that, because you cannot...
You can't be with your club team up until...
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it is in October, then that means that the start of the season is... It doesn't happen then.
The start of the season would have to happen after
that, and then run into the summer, and then you don't get as big a break. So it's almost like you'd have to change the structure of Champions League, Premiership, all those different European leagues forever after. Because there will either be a time when there's no football for 5 or 6 months, or the players get 2 weeks off and then they're right back into it.
Yeah. It's just an absolute mess altogether, and that's what I'm saying, like, to pick, as you're saying, there's no foresight here. Like, to pick Qatar.
So you're saying any Bruce foresight in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. To pick Qatar, like, 2042, you know, that'll make more sense when you go, right, we're hoping to switch it to winter around that time, you know, and we're hoping to make plans in advance. But, like, there's been no plans for this. Like, why have they picked Qatar? Like, why have they kind of gone out of their way to make this happen?
Well,
money.
Yeah, but they can't go, yeah, you're gonna have the World Cup there and then just not have it there. Like, at this stage, it's far too late. They have to have it in Qatar.
It's 9 years away. They could,
yeah, but I mean, they have given it to Qatar. And
yeah,
like,
Qatar started organizing things.
Obviously,
yeah.
You know, and then they go, like, how does it work? It was almost like a
settlement.
Year.
Here's a few FIFA jumpers. Okay. You know, thanks for your work.
Here's a pen.
Yeah, a couple of wristbands.
These all say Qatar 2020. Yep. Don't need them anymore.
We don't need jumpers. It's too hot here as it is. You keep forgetting that.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. You were saying, though, it could change the structure of the Champions League and Premier League and European leagues altogether.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
For the future going ahead. So it could be a watershed moment for world football that. It's going to change if FIFA are going to try to bring all world leagues aligned almost and have them coexist.
Would everyone go for that? I can't imagine anyone would. Like, it'd almost be like the Premier League could just say, well, we're just going to keep going the way we always do, and it'll effectively be like the African Cup of Nations. Whoever's playing the World Cup, they won't be in their teams.
It's,
I mean, I know you almost can't do that, but if it's a case of
Ireland,
for one,
if we don't qualify,
for one,
we will dominate that Premier League.
Like, for one season, or for one World Cup, like, for one season, some of the teams don't have some of their best players for a couple of weeks, or completely changing how the whole thing has been run for the last.
Also, imagine pitching that to any of the leagues. Like, imagine pitching that to the Premier League. Like, oh, we're gonna take most of your good players. and then they'll have to fine all of the clubs for not fielding their strongest 11 all the time.
Yeah,
reserves.
Yeah, yeah. That's another problem. You register 25 players at the start of the tournament.
Yeah.
If you're a team like Manchester United, Chelsea, Man City, you have 20 international
20,
players.
Yeah.
You cannot forego that if that's the case. I suppose if that's the case, I'm saying that it's not conceivable to do that. Is it on the flip side then? Will UEFA turn around and say, well, we're not, you know, okay, you want to have the World Cup on in October, November in 2022. That's fine. Go ahead, do that. But no European teams are going to be competing on it. What we're going to do is we're going to stage another European Championship, yeah, for example, in that summer, and we're going to carry on as normal.
Mm.
And say, we don't need your World Cup. We don't need to go there. We can have our own tournament in a time when it suits everybody else in the world almost to play it, when it suits all the European teams. And now, whether they have the authority, I don't know. I don't know whether they have the authority to turn and say, we're not going to host qualifiers, we don't care, do what you want, we're just going
to
have another.
That would be an absolute shame to lose the World Cup because of this idiotic move, you know?
But it, at the same time, it would force FIFA's hand, because we know Sepp Blatter has come out and said that we can't run along, he goes, like, it's only you, like, we can't just run along the European schedule, do it suit Europe.
Yeah.
Well, he goes, because there's, whatever, five other confederations can be, like, in there. It's like, well, fair enough, but how many of the world's top players play in Europe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where does all the, or almost half of the viewership come from? Where does all the money come from?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Why have the times in Brazil been changed to suit European viewing time?
Yeah.
You know, the money comes in there. Yeah. The top players play in Europe.
I understand, well, especially considering he chases the money all the time, and his organization is like blood and money hungry. It seems. We'll throw that allegedly. But, you know, it's just, there's so many, I mean, look, we're breaking down so many, and everyone has, it's not obviously not just us, but, like, it starts to hurt your head after you talk about it for a while. It's like, why, like, because there's just no organisation around us at all, like, no preparation for any, to answer any of these questions, you know. And we mentioned the homosexuality issue, and the lack of rights for homosexuals and women there, which is just, it's a huge, huge thing.
But it's been overlooked at the moment. So
yeah, it is, because it's hot. You know? For example, like, I'll just take a quote here that I picked out from Alexei Sorokin, the head of the 2018 World Cup Organising Committee. He's Russian. And he said, basically, he compared homosexuality to Nazism and asked, would you like a World Cup where naked people are running around displaying their homosexuality? The answer to that is quite obvious.
Yes. Yes, I would like that.
There are a few people in the world who would like that.
Like, but he doesn't know what homosexuals are. He's he's thinking of lunatic nudists.
When you take that quote as, you know, that's pure nonsense.
But that's who's organising this.
But when you look at the Olympics are always about promoting, you know, unity and togetherness and all that kind of stuff. Now, Russia have the Winter Olympics, don't they, around the same time? So there's a lot of questions being asked about whether they're going to be more lenient, because there are some gay athletes out there. Now, we know there are no gay footballers, or one that we know of. Well,
yeah.
Rodgers is
very,
the only one that's
very few.
And
out,
maybe,
yeah,
possibly in the next few years, more will come out.
Mm.
If there are any gay footballers.
It makes it more difficult when you're playing in a country that makes it illegal for you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's... When he's talking, as we said, when he's talking about fighting a certain discrimination, you know, it's not like we sacrifice, like, three things to discriminate against for this one rich thing to not discriminate against, you know?
They're going to have the problems in Russia beforehand, and knowing FIFA, they won't learn from any of this if it is going to be held in Qatar in 4 years or 5 years later, whatever the case may be, if they do move. So you know that there's going to be problems when they get to Qatar anyway. And when he was asked about it before, we discussed it, was... What will happen with homosexuals over there, blah, blah. And he says maybe they should refrain from homosexual activity over there. What about women? Should they refrain from being women while they're over there? It's absolutely bizarre.
Yeah.
Just want to ask you, though, can you see, like, I suppose, which is more reckless? Having the tournament on in that blistering heat when it's, if it's not function, if athletes kind of function in that weather, then the likelihood is that normal people won't get to function in that weather.
Yeah. It's not an option, is it? It's the only option
but which
is to have it in the winter.
But is it more reckless moving into the winter? Is there another option to say, we can't feasibly hold the tournament here?
Well, that's what I would have said from the very beginning, where, I mean, this is going back when we started doing this podcast in, like, 2010, wasn't it, when this came up?
It was
2011, maybe it came,
maybe just after, yeah. But this was the thing, and we talked about it as if that's not going to be possible.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a huge issue. And it's just seems to be like, ah, it's coming up later. We'll sort that out till we have to.
Yeah.
And now it's up, and it's like, oh yeah.
But at least they're actually, at least it's 9 years away.
Yeah.
And if they took precautions, they could start possibly starting seasons a week earlier every year or something. Yeah. Like that. But you still get the problem of, well, actually, you've got two World Cups in between that, and they're not going to be moved.
Mm. As you're saying, without being in any way discriminatory to anyone who lives anywhere, I don't think it's a good idea to just, like, up and root and change the entire season. And I don't think it's the idea to have it in it, you know, absolutely impossible heat. So maybe don't pick Qatar. Without being, I don't think that's discrimination.
Pick them, but yeah.
Mm. Well, as you're saying,
well, I mean, they've already been picked. Now, whether it's FIFA can say,
like, I don't know if there's any sort of exit
clause
strategy.
Probably is an exit clause. No, FIFA.
Yeah. The old Sepp-Blatter cut and run clause that no one reads in, like, the tiniest print you'll ever see, made of orphans' blood.
dear. So can you see any solutions?
No. It's going to be one, like, it's just looking for the lesser of two evils at this stage. Like, it's fucked either way.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to piss off Qatar if they're moving out of there. They're going to piss off all the athletes if they say, well, let's play in that league. Or anything. Or if they move everything, they're going to piss off UEFA.
Yeah. Like, and piss off people's rights.
There's so many problems that there's no way to fix it.
Is football going to be broken from this? Like, is it just going to freeze and jam and just we won't be able to restart football?
It's going to be like when you go too far in a football manager game,
yeah,
and things start going mental.
Yeah,
you two games one day.
You start to score 900 goals a season and everything just go, I'm all for that. I'd be up for that.
But I'm thinking, in the fans' case, logistically it's going to be a nightmare as well trying to get over there. You know,
it's a dry country.
They'll probably run
during
Christmas, knowing them. You know, the competition will run in November, December, the final will be on Christmas Eve or something stupid like that. Nobody will be able to.
Christmas Eve final. You're not spending Christmas Day with your families. You're getting out there.
Spending with your real loved ones. The World Cup.
In blistering heat.
Watch out for other lads running around with mistletoe. They'll get put down if that happens, you know?
I wonder how warm it actually is in Qatar during the winter. It would probably realize, actually, it's minus 15.
Yeah.
And the big issue is, what's going to happen to football manager? Man? It's going to be the seasons are going to be all over the place.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah.
Like, you know,
when does FIFA come in? That's
it. Do they have a World Cup special? Do they lose out revenue?
Yeah.
Big question. So if you want to get in touch with anything regarding that, to 12thmanpodcast@hotmail.com or on the Twitter @12thmanpodcast, or just leave a comment on the Facebook page when we get discussion going, because it's absolutely bizarre and ludicrous.
Yeah.
If you can think of some way that we can, like, we could all solve football here. So we're all counting on you.
Yeah.
If you come up with a good way of solving it, we'll steal that. Moving on.
We're moving on to FIFA.
Trap out. Trap it. Trap's gone.
Yeah.
Trap is gone.
The hashtag is useless now.
Yeah. But it was very useful because it got rid of him.
It was all about the hashtag.
Yeah, it was all about the hashtag. That's what the FAI said. So we were going to keep him, but we were all on Twitter and it was
miscommunication, eh? The name of the game when it comes to Ireland and Trapattoni, it seems.
He's gone. Tardelli's gone. They both left. 6 months before our contract expired. And this is on the back of defeats to Austria and Sweden.
Two dreadful
results. Yeah, two awful results. Two awful performances.
When's the last time Ireland actually... Aside from your 2012, when's the last time we lost two games in a row?
Before Trapattoni came in.
Probably.
We had long.
Probably we lose three games in a row because
the
next game is against Germany.
And we were missing Robbie Keane, Richard Dunn, John Shea.
Trap.
We'll be missing our manager.
Possibly on the manager.
Probably just have Don Givens again, who is just caretaker manager on hold.
He doesn't even work with the under-21s anymore.
I don't know, that doesn't matter. He's just the go-to guy when we need a caretaker manager.
Not no king, is it? Else?
But, yeah. So.
Yeah, look, let's talk about the defeat to... We were at the Sweden match, myself and you, Declan. You were in a Sweden jersey, for God's sake.
Yeah, I did. I was given this jersey... not by a Swede, by my own father, who met a Swede who gave him this jersey. So, Yeah, I'm wearing that. We actually saw a lovely moment, after the game, where we were sitting there kind of glum, letting everyone else exit while we kind of waited a few minutes. And, you know, just
which
like...
Which wasn't a good idea in hindsight.
No, no, it wasn't, but... Swedes walking past us and stuff like that, you just like, no, obviously you're not like, oh, I hate you, but you're just like, bloody winning fuckers. And they have to go and be lovely, as you said, handsome, another thing, but they have to go and be lovely and turn around, and a kid with his dad in front of us, and the Swedish guy takes off his scarf and puts it on the kid, and I was, there you go, man, and just walks off, and it was like,
the kid looked terribly confused.
Yeah, well, he was happy to get a scarf, but also probably very sad that, you know.
Well, I would have liked the scarf, it was quite cold.
Yeah, it was. My first game of the Aviva.
Yeah, it was. It's the second time you've been there.
I pointed out to Sock when we're at the game that I'd seen more women's Champions League finals and Hungary friendlies than I'd seen Ireland matches of the Aviva. Or any match of the Aviva, yeah. So.
You started listening to that. That shows the calibre of match. He was in the list off a bunch of things that came out more in the match.
But it was good.
This is just to clarify, this wasn't your first Ireland match, this was the first
one. No, first with the Aviva, yeah.
You're not some sort of idiot. Yeah, we were there, we watched it, and the first 30 minutes, 25 minutes were brilliant. It was that seemed like great football.
Now, and the atmosphere was excellent.
Something that we say almost every game. First 20 minutes were really good. Or like, there's a pocket of time always in the Ireland game. It's like, oh, during this part, we were really good. Mm. It's like, it's useless. You lost. Like,
yeah, it's frustrating in the sense of they're talking about plan A, plan B. Like,
there is no plan A or plan B.
That's the problem is that there didn't seem to be a plan A. Plan A seemed to be back, but that's not plan. That's, you know, the position and stuff like that. There was no, you know, we weren't playing. I can't remember who it was talked a lot about Jack Charlton's style of play and that. His plan A worked. Like, obviously, there's all these arguments about how we should have played, but he was successful at doing what he did. Our plan A didn't work, and didn't seem to be a plan at all. It seemed to be very, very all over the place. Well, and the frustrating thing about that is, clearly there's a difference in what they've been told to do in the set. Say, just the Sweden game as an example. Taking, you know, no other game into example. Just that one. You know, good stuff in the first half. Passing the ball, which was strange to see. I mean, I saw Glenn Whelan put the ball forward. I saw, you know, the wingers coming looking for the ball. I saw the strike. Obviously, there was still a degree of getting up quickly, but, you know, there was something there that wasn't there in the second half and wasn't, clearly was told not to be there.
Yeah.
You know, there was just an edge of confusion around everything. There was one stage when me and Shane were sitting there and Jonathan Walters swapped with James McLean, and we were talking. We were like that's a stupid thing to do. I understand swapping wingers.
Yeah,
but McLean is not good at cutting inside and shooting, and Jonathan Walters is awkward on the left. The original reason you would imagine they're in there is for a bit of a Sam Allardyce-ish downing swinging the ball in to Andy Carroll is what you would imagine. To swap them made no sense at all. It was absolutely idiotic.
And the fact that James McLean was probably our most dangerous player when he was on the left, because he had the beating of whoever
Lustig?
Yeah, Mikael Lustig.
Oh, Lustig.
It was weird, like, just let him keep doing that, you know?
I understand that in general. Like, I mean, they do it with McGeady and him, and when Duff and McGeady were there, they do it all the time, but
Duff and McGeady were actually interchanging.
Yeah, exactly. But it was pointless coming from that stage, because you're like, well, we're wasting 15 minutes now of time where you're taking these two players out of the game effectively, and our midfield wasn't really in the game at all, like our centre midfield. So you've effectively got four players like not really using the ball, you know, and Shane Long getting battered around while Robbie picked them up and put him in other positions to flick the ball onto him.
It's a point that Robbie Keane said in the press conference after the Sweden game, and he seemed quite angry, a bit fed up maybe, you know, being, you know, he's just been fed up that we haven't qualified, I'd say, and he knew that was probably the last chance at the Sweden game. And
also his last chance for to be at a World Cup.
He's already beat the one. He doesn't be greedy.
He's gonna be our top. He's gonna end up with 100 goals. We're gonna keep him for that long.
Is that 60?
Yeah. I was thinking that he's probably one of the only people who would retire from club football to prolong his
international career,
because he genuinely cares more about playing for Ireland than playing for his club. Yeah. Like, it's always kind of been there.
That's great. But anyway, the point is,
it's great for us.
Yeah. He was very committed to Donovan when he was there.
Yeah, he was. I mean, it's not like he just goes, not going to train with you today.
But he does always travel, even for a point of training. He's not. I suppose he's captain, and that's a good thing to do. But the point was that he said in the press conference that there's no plan B, there never was a plan B, blah, 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 blah. We've always had, you know, to a certain extent, there has been a plan B in place with other managers. Well, McCarthy.
Yeah, World Cup 2002 is a good example of not exactly a plan B, but.
Not just the World Cup, the whole build up to that.
Yeah, yeah. But when he's saying that we've always played that way, it's like, no, we haven't. We didn't in that tournament. You know, we still had Niall Quinn, but we didn't.
We used him.
Sparingly, exactly. We would bring him on late on to try win headers for flick-ons for Robbie Keane.
But that's the plan B.
But that was
there you go.
But the plan A then was to play the ball around to try beat your men.
We had now, like Duff and Keane up front. Neither of them are big men. It's useless to lump the ball up to them.
So we
couldn't feasibly do that.
When we had a different team with Charlton, and it was like, oh, it was long balls. You do see it. It was like. It was a different thing because we'd passed the ball back to Bonner, Patrick Bonner, who would boot the ball up front.
Yeah.
But what Charlton said, and he always maintained it, was it's not just long ball football, it's about playing the right ball at the right time. And if you put a ball in behind the defenders and chase that down, you're putting them under pressure. But
you had to say it, didn't you?
You are putting them under pressure because that ball is in there. No defender wants to be chasing after the ball because they don't want to be facing their own goals.
Yeah.
So they're running after that ball. And what we were doing, particularly in the Sweden match, actually in Austria both matches one of them was we put the ball over the top and we let Shane Long run onto it, but that was it. There was nobody pressing
exactly
the space.
Yeah,
it was like the midfield was just step up, but there was nobody pressing that space. So you play a long ball up front to Shane Long, he's good in the air, but he's not going to be winning that many headers.
If he wants to play like that, you would imagine he'd play Walters up front a lot, or start Salmon, or like, it's kind of half in half out to that tactic, you know. There's the principle of what he wants to do with it, but not the right kind of concept behind it. Like you're saying, to not getting anyone to follow up, not getting anyone to run after the ball once it's gone past that point, you know?
It's that sort of cautious approach that you would imagine, if that's the sort of style that you want to play and you want to be like winning games, you push the two centre midfielders right up there.
Mm.
But he doesn't want to be losing games. He doesn't want people to be out of position when they break, which is inevitably going to happen because we're just lumping the ball at them.
Yeah.
So he says... tells him to drop. I mean, what it seemed like we wanted was, we just want to get lucky. Like,
yeah,
That's how we scored the goal against Sweden. We just got lucky. Mm. And, like, Robbie Keane just kept chasing the ball down when keeper made a balls of it.
Yeah.
And the defenders made a balls of
it. The defender flicked it back. And the keeper came.
Excellent goal from Robbie Keane, more pointing out. Like, exactly why we love him. And, you know.
He's one of the only strikers in the world that closes down like that. So quick. Like
we saw the point, I'm not sure you could see it on TV because I haven't actually gotten to watch it back yet, but the point, you know, again, the typical poaching goalkeeper,
goalkeeper,
you know, picked the ball and Robbie Keane stood back at the, at the goals waiting for the keeper to put it down.
He's done it twice.
Shea Given and, no, not Shea Given, Dion Dublin did it to Shea Given. But he's done it against Liverpool. He's done it against Liverpool, alright. Vesterveld?
I can't remember. What his name?
Could have been Vesterveld or Dudek.
No, I
think
it was
Dudek.
Different one.
Yeah.
But he did it to, what's his name? The goalkeeper. Wright. Was it Wright?
Yeah, it Richard. Was Wright. Richard Wright, yeah.
Yeah.
But Man City's Richard Wright. But it's you know, still in the, you know, just getting into confusing tactical moves by him, you know. I argued this frequently. None of us wanted Cox in the team. Nothing against Cox himself. Didn't think he offered enough
in going forward. But
he's absolutely not right winger. But again, very puzzlingly, in Sweden game, prime example, because the Austria game is boring as shit. he took Walters off for Cox and he took McLean off for Pilkington. Okay. Now, again, the reason I would imagine you would have Walters and McLean in there is for, as I said, the Sam Allardyce move to, you know, that's the. Well, McLean is a relatively one-trick kind of player. He's going to go down the wing, he's going to cross it in. He's going to go down the wing, he's going to cross it in all game. And Walters is up there for...
But he's so quick, he'll beat his man.
Yeah, but Walters is up there for the whole effect. Bringing Cox on basically takes out that awkward, you know, disruptive player like Walters. And bringing Pennington on takes out that aspect.
With the one... think that we're
going to enjoy. The threat with it, yeah. So taking McLean off for him. So what you're left with essentially is a disciplined right midfielder player who doesn't exactly do anything that well, and you know, relative ball player who's uncomfortable out on the left. You know,
but the thing about those switches, or most of the changes that he does, they seem to be predetermined.
Yeah,
regardless
pre-emptive
of how,
changes, yeah,
how the game is going, he's sitting there and he's going, well, I'm going to give Pilkington 20 minutes, whatever it was, I'm going to give Cox 10 minutes. He knows who he wants to bring on. He doesn't look at, well, it seemed like that anyway.
Well, you know, we're very quick to push away people, you know, jumping on the bandwagon of, like, you need to play, you know, Brady now. It's like, we don't need to play him right now. I understand people want to see a quick, pacey winger to liven things up, but it doesn't always happen exactly like that. I mean, if he bursts on the scene and gets 7 assists in his first 7 games and a couple of goals, then you'd be like, well, he has to be in, doesn't he?
He's playing Premiership football now. He plays well for Hull.
Yeah.
But there is that thing about, like, Irish fans seem to, like, fetishize over these players that aren't playing.
Yeah.
Andy Reid, Wes Ireland's
the buzzwords these days.
Yeah. Like,
we don't need to listen because we've done it so many times before in this exact conversation. But, like, we're very quick not to jump with that. But, you know, for example, look, we haven't even started talking about new manager yet, but if say it was O'Neill, I'd be surprised if Brady, Gibson, McCarthy and McGeady wasn't that midfield.
Yeah, well, you'd imagine,
like,
I mean, there's not much changes you would, like, make to the team, really. Like,
well, that's a relatively decent change. I mean,
I mean, I just mean, like, you know, the worst thing that the manager could do, well, not the worst thing, obviously, but, like, it'd be pretty bad if the manager came in and said, right, complete rehaul of the whole system, like, everything has to change, sort of thing.
I think that's what happened with Steve Staunton came in, and I think that's, people shouldn't forget what happened under Steve Staunton. When Trapattoni came in, we were in a complete mess.
There's people rushing to you know, villainize him, and it's like, look, he didn't do that well at the end, but he wasn't like a tyrant who held on to the job. He wavered away, away some of the money he was owed.
But to say people, you say, I should have been gone off the Euros, well, you can't really you can't sack a manager after the terrible competition. We all know that. We were awful in it. But he got us there, so we deserved a new contract. That was his,
and, like,
that was his remit, was to go there, get us, qualify us for a tournament. He qualified us for a tournament.
How often is it that people get frustrated at this concept of sacking managers so quickly that they then, you know, when it suits them, they go, no, he should be sacked. But it's like, no, well, you know, you got to stick to this principle. I'm a firm believer in that people shouldn't be sacked, you know, in their first, in maybe extreme circumstances, but I don't think that's, you know, an extreme of circumstance to warrant a sacking back then. I think we had that conversation, actually, you know. It comes frustratingly down to poor choices in every department, if you ask me. Tactically, you know, the communication was a huge thing, and RTE's starting piece there the other day, before the Austria game, had featured an interview with Mark Wilson, and it was absolutely shocking how long it took him to answer.
Yeah.
You watched it real with me, where the interviewer asked him, you know, is the communication clear enough with Trapattoni in there? And he literally went, rubbed his head, said, that's a tough one to answer, and to be honest, it's about as clear as it'll ever get. You know, that's devastating to hear. That's like, so what you're saying is, you don't always understand what's going on. That's ridiculous. We're trying to qualify for the World Cup. You know, if you don't know what's going on, you know, and then the fact that he's, you know, people get on his back, he's there 5 years, he hasn't learned enough English, people get on his back for, I mean, suicidal comments, like, to make after the Sweden game, and say, you know, Ireland doesn't have a league, Sweden has a league, and Austria has a league. It's like, look, even if he believes that, that's the wrong PR move to make directly after losing,
like,
the Sweden
that,
game.
That statement was kind of contradicting his earlier statement. Like, it seemed like he was in between saying, well, actually, like, I think we've done a very good job. And, like, he did kind of seem like he was saying, you know, this was always going to be kind of a transition.
He has got a point, though, in the fact that we don't have professional league.
That is true, but the way it was phrased is just, it makes him look bad because it makes him look like he doesn't know that a league almost exists.
Yeah,
it makes the FAI look bad because they represent the league, mm-hmm. and it's him putting down that league.
Yeah.
It, like, and phrasing is, like, all he has to say there is the standard in
Sweden and Austria is higher.
Is higher. They're both professional, we're a semi-pro league.
Yeah, and I mean, but that this could was, be but this was the case.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably, like, it probably is just lost in translation.
What he said was the case before we played either of these games. To come out and say it in the middle of these games is somewhat provocative to a group of people who are already a bit on his back.
Well, I don't think it was provocative. Like, but it was him trying to absolve blame from himself. It was him trying to say, what can I do here? They're better teams.
The players look fed up during the night. I think it's going to be good to see. You know, although, we saw that with Keane arguing, getting a bit petty in the press conference and stuff.
They did all seem to be very, very, very respectful of him when he left.
Well, there would be. He qualified for a tournament.
Like, but you know, when you're saying the fed up way, the only person I heard come out and say it was Shay Given, who's no longer an Ireland player, saying, you know, it's time for a change kind of thing, he needs to go.
I just know
the
I
rest
mean,
of them were very much
but not. Even look at the way they conduct themselves on the pitch. Shane Long, when he came after tonight, he just looked frustrated. He was like, no, you get that, maybe it's the play and all that, but he and the fact that the new rep's run, but they must be thinking to themselves, we're not going anywhere under this manager. And 2-3 years ago we were going somewhere, we were qualifying for tournaments and we got a lucky break in the fact that we got an easy draw in the qualifier and the playoff and all that.
Yeah,
that's nice, but you know, we were scammed out of going to the World Cup the last time around. People, you know, people can't forget that. And considering where we'd come from for Euro 2008, like, you know, I mean, where we'd come from in the Staunton era to even get us that close. But that's not what I want to go into. What I wanted to say was the players look fed up, and I think it's good that we get a fresh start. We're going to bring in a new manager, but who is the new manager?
Well, we're giving odds. All the
bookies. We're giving odds. We're giving odds now.
The bookies are Ruud Hoban 22-1. The bookies are giving Martin O'Neill's favourite, McDermott's second, Roy Keane and Mick McCarthy are just after that. And a lot of people have been chucking Alex Ferguson's face on things, which is outrageous.
Yeah.
Oh, he could come out in retirement, a tasty job like this one.
Yeah.
You know, he'd snap that up.
The money's there.
Christ.
Yeah.
My point was always, I think I said this a long, long time ago when we talked about Martin O'Neill as an Ireland manager. Yeah, I'd think he'd be grand. I wouldn't have a problem with him as a job because he can't spend money at Ireland.
But he'll get fed up after a few months.
He can't buy Nicky Shorey. We'll be alright, you know. I think he's alright at you know, especially at the start. Give him a year contract, he can galvanise the team. We saw it with Sunderland.
Yeah, that's true. He's a mad manager.
We'll beat Germany. If he comes to me before then, we'll beat Germany and we'll not qualify for any tournament.
Like, we don't want to go down that route of, like, people saying, oh yeah, well, obviously some people will, some people won't say about Roy Keane. We all know about those issues.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous.
He has no international experience. Like, okay, yeah, fair enough. We hired Mick McCarthy, had no experience, but he was a really good manager. I'd love Mick McCarthy to come back now.
I wouldn't be totally against McCarthy coming back.
You need somebody who's obviously going to give those players a chance, but you also need to find a way to play. And I don't know what the best way to play is, but when you look at Trapdown and you say, well, you were playing 4-4-2. Who plays 4-4-2 anymore?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I think we have the potential to have a good counter-attacking team. Defensively, we're not solid enough to do it, though, I don't think, at the moment, which is a shame because we used to be good at that. And just the last few games, and anyway, we showed that we're not. But with McLean and Brady, we said, have players with pace. Shane Long's great pace. You know, there is a problem with Robbie Keane, whether we can keep playing him or not. In the system, or even just play him long out of the way, bringing in players like hopefully maybe David Myler in midfield who could play like as an anchor man, whether it's him or if it is Whelan or Gibson.
If Gibson wants to come back to play
McCarthy in there as well, Hendrick off Derby as well, you've got some decent players there come in. And you know, you've got Coleman coming up the wing. Wilson was awful against Sweden.
Yeah, dreadful game. But he's not that poor all the time.
Yeah.
Just we didn't also mention someone who probably deserves a mention as well, be Brian Kerr.
Highest win ratio, but he's already managed the team.
If he came, I wouldn't be surprised if he came in as caretaker maybe, but I can't see him getting
caretaker.
I'd be quite happy with having him in.
I'd love him back.
I think
I'm not sure who it was earlier. It could have been just a friend of a friend tweeting and said, like, you know, jokingly towards the FAI saying, get Brian Kerr in and let him reevaluate like the entire Irish system of everything, because he knows so much about Irish football. He knows the individual players so well, you know. And if he doesn't, he'll research them like he always bloody does. Yeah.
Also,
absolutely fantastic lad.
If he does come back, just let him wear a tracksuit.
Yeah.
He looks awkward in a suit. Don't force him to wear it.
I think he looks alright in a suit.
There's more, right. I don't know.
Did you see... Sorry, just briefly before we get on, that's what I'm saying. Brady...
Well, I wasn't getting off.
Oh, sorry. Okay. But Brady... Bill tried to put the question to Liam... Bill O'Reilly tried to put the question to Liam Brady... would he take the Ireland job? Yeah. It was so awkward. No, that's not the question.
I'm not a manager. That's all he said. We're gonna be so awkward. We're gonna be 4th seeds now in the next qualifying campaign. We qualified for 2016.
Well,
it's an expanded tournament.
Yeah, that's the only thing we can cling on to is more teams in it.
Two teams go through the group, is it? And
I think. So. Yeah, I don't really know what the
playoffs
system
for
is.
Some people.
Yeah, the playoffs is like not every third. Not every team that finishes third is in the best position.
There's also... Okay, if we had beaten Austria, we had beaten Sweden, it's a different story altogether. But there was also the possibility that even if we had done that, we wouldn't have got a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we may have finished bottom of the of the rankings, which was quite odd if that had happened.
Yeah, that would have been annoying. Considering, like, there's the whole thing about, we didn't get through the World Cup. Like, everyone's out to get us.
Yeah, there's also groups which have five teams, which is... It's just, I don't know. I don't understand it sometimes. It just confuses me. I think we would probably leave it there with the Trap Tony talk and the Ireland talk.
We can only do so much for now.
If somebody gets appointed in the next
few weeks, we'll be on it.
We'll let you know. I'm sure you'll probably hear about it before us, though. But we'll analyse that and we'll look towards the future, which is all we can do at the moment. And the Germany games are right off, and if there is a manager in place before the Kazakhstan game, maybe we'll start to see some improvements.
They beat us 6-1 at home. With our full team.
Yeah.
We're going away. And then...
It's not actually... Jesus. We're worse at home than we are away, almost. Our record under Trap Tony.
Yeah. Again, people do discount the fact that we were away from home technically at the Euros and got trashed at all the games.
But it's a neutral ground.
It's a neutral venue.
I understand that, but it's not home.
It's not an away fixture.
Everybody bar two teams were away from home and that... Yeah. Like, by that logic, Croatia were away from home.
I understand what you mean, but I don't get hung up on this. We don't win at home. Look, they're bad results wherever the fuck they are.
I mean, we're most likely gonna lose, but I don't think it's gonna be
I will go further and say we will 100% definitely lose this game.
Okay, we'll get your money on that.
Robbie Keane didn't play in the other game as well.
Yes. Grass is always greener on your side, though, isn't it, lads? England, eh? Things are going rosy for them. They beat Moldova. Moldova. Big Moldova. They drew Ukraine, though, away from home. Which isn't a bad result.
In the context of the group.
Yeah.
It's grand.
Well, they've got two home games left against Montenegro and Poland, but...
And
England consider themselves to be one of the top five nations
in
the world.
I don't think anyone else considers them that, though.
Let alone Europe.
FIFA.
But I mean, generally, like us fans, pundits. I don't think anyone considers.
You could pick five teams from Europe that are better than, like, Belgium are better than them at the moment. Yeah. Like,
they proved that. What was it last year? They had a friendly and it was a draw. But Belgium played them actually off the park.
It
was like fourth. Team that were fourth in the rankings versus team that was like 36th in the rankings. Everyone's should be a win.
Spain, Italy, France,
Holland,
you know, any of these teams.
Like Germany.
Any of those big teams.
Under Alex Ferguson, as I tell you. Shooting up the rankings.
Someone pointed out, absolutely brilliant, I'm not sure who it was, asking could we keep Manuela if we got Ferguson? Because we need a translator. Oh, speaking of, actually, we didn't get to, when we were at the Aviva, there was a really awkward halftime interview.
With
Manuela, basically. And it was, what's his name? Shane?
Aiden Power,
which is basically, for England, anyone that's English, listen, he's Ireland's Vernon Kay. And he basically did this interview where he was like, so Manuela, what's it like, blah, blah, blah. But she was speaking too quietly, or he had the mic too far away from her, so all we could hear was... Yeah, brilliant. And then it was a kind of like, awkwardly clapping her off then. It was like,
do we clap her off?
What happened? It was fantastic. It was so funny.
Glenn Crow got a... Glenn Crow was given the award at halftime for his contribution to Irish football. He was there with his two children and what we presumed was his wife, but suddenly the woman who we thought was his wife presented him with the
award and walked off.
Walked away.
It was very unusual.
It wasn't his wife.
So that wasn't his wife. Oh, because they were kind of huddled together for a while. And, you know, the kid was kind of, they were announcing the kid played football for some team and he looked delighted. And it was just awkward. It was really strange. Like, there's Glenn Crowe and the family have to be given away. Oh, his wife has left him.
this award has gone to your head.
But it's been mishmash of a day. Like,
speaking of awkward,
it's a bittersweet moment for Glenn Crowe here. Speaking of awkward, was Paul Green getting the man to actually as well.
God,
not being able to look at the person who's giving the award.
I'll upload that photo later. We have a fantastic photo of that. It's poor quality, but you know.
He didn't look her in the eye. He was, what?
She looked him directly into the soul.
I
was expecting Phil Collins music to play and them to just get down to it.
Anyway, we're talking about England, weren't we?
Yeah, probably.
That's kind of dull. Let's go back to
Ireland. They've got two games left against Poland and Montenegro at home. They really should be beating Poland and Montenegro. Yeah. But England seem to have this, kind of like Ireland do, an inferiority complex where they go, oh, we're playing a team that are okay, we're going to lose.
Yeah. They've had that for years.
It's such a strainer because then they make it to the World Cup and they think,
oh, we're going to win this.
We're in a group with Germany, Portugal and, you know, Cameroon. That will destroy all of them.
That's poor Sweden. They're three European teams.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird
one. That's terrible. Yeah. Where are England in the world football? Where would you rank them?
It's hard to rank, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I mean, rankings are so difficult to...
Yeah. So-so. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah,
they're so-so.
I'd give them a...
A favourable mess.
They barely beat Ukraine in the Euros. You know, they were lucky to beat Ukraine.
Ukraine are a better team than they were in the Euros, as we're pointing out.
Yeah, and now they drew away Ukraine. That's drawing in Ukraine is a decent result. There's no problem with that.
It is. And as you said, considering the results, Hodgson has been good for keeping, not keeping them grounded in a sense, but there's
they can't get carried away. We have Roy Hodgson as manager.
Yeah.
We'll beat everyone.
Capello or Beldwitz, it was like, for Hodgson, we might get a good run in
but
the
I
cup.
Think it might be.
That's all we're in cups.
But I think
might get a solid eight.
I think it has been
we got to do
Champions League.
No, you finished bottom of your World Cup group.
It's been good for them though with Hodgson. It's been a lot kind of calmer and
doing things like
look, Ricky Lambert's come in, they're picking the man in form, they're not doing sticking with a rigid, stubborn, horrible system that's not working, you know?
Get that with Hodgson.
England have, again, say in Ireland, they have the potential to be a very good counter-back team. They've got players with great pace.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about... But Sturridge seems to be the main man up front, but you've got
Welbeck had an excellent game the other in Moldova.
He plays much better for England.
Yeah.
Hold on.
In fairness to Welbeck, he's starting the season quite well.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I think this season is a new season for him completely.
Yeah, they were all going to be off topic here.
Twice the amount of goals as he did last season. So.
They got Ashley Young to a certain extent. I don't know how much he's going to play. Walcott,
Chamberlain.
They've got great pace there. They've got a couple of decent midfielders in Wilshere and Cleverley who are good on the ball now. If they can find somebody who can keep them in check,
keep that balance.
Well, they're not going to drop Gerrard, are they?
No, they're not going to drop Gerrard Lambert, but I mean going forward,
yeah,
they're probably not going to drop Gerrard Lambert. So you're talking about Gerrard and Wilshere, Carrick wants to play.
I know it's a different thing now, but Gerrard's playing a defensive role for us nowadays, and I know it's not in the same role as that player you're talking about, that, you know.
Yeah. That was something more of an anchor man, like they could have got with Carberry, or to a certain extent with Carrick, but...
Well, we'll see. There's no point in trying to guess the team.
But they do have that potential, because they do have a much more solid defence.
And Ricky Lambert should definitely be in there. Well, that's all I was saying. Who was it? Clyde Tilsley on ITV's commentary? Ricky Lambert, born to wear the shirt! It's like, oh, way to hype him up. Two games, two goals.
Yeah.
Good stat.
I mean... He's in form, pick him. He's not an international caliber player.
He probably won't go to the World Cup. He'll probably help them.
I think he will go to the World Cup.
It depends. I mean,
Hodgson seems to like him. And he just gives them an
option. Sturridge, Welbeck, Rooney.
Carroll.
They're not going to just
Carroll's
pick him or Carroll, though.
Carroll's
Bent could come back with a bit of form to fall.
Well, I'd rather Lambert than...
Oh, so would I.
Bent
but I'm
fall at the moment.
Yeah.
Like,
but I'm
he offers something different. If you pick, Welbeck, Sturridge, Rooney and Defoe, for example, it's more like Defoe of a better season. Mm. You've got three of the same forwards there almost, and then you've got Rooney, who is massively inconsistent.
Yeah.
Like, this. Okay, Rooney's going to go no matter what, but there's no guarantee he's going to even have a good season.
No.
Like, you know, it's a strange one. Anyway, move on, move away from England, because it's more likely they'll get there. We'll talk about more when they do, which we assume they will.
We're not really analysing the games very well, but, you know, you've seen them, so. And if you haven't, watch them.
The draw of Ukraine seemed dour.
Yeah.
So it's the one way to describe it. And they scored Moldova a lot against a poor Moldova team.
Well,
we expect to beat Moldova.
Yeah, true. Welbeck's finishing was quite good. It was
something he's not good at.
No, it seemed very composed, which was, you know.
Which is unlike him.
It was very strange. It's like I'm getting used to seeing him score now, and I'm like, oh no, he's going to be a threat.
Maybe I'll just cover the other home nations. Scotland lost to Belgium the other day, but they beat Macedonia last night.
Yeah.
Which was quite good, because Macedonia away from home, Ireland struggled to beat them.
Yeah.
And we discussed it last time, a few of us watched the match together. The Scotland team really isn't much worse than the Ireland team. And I think they're probably on par almost. They're bar one or two, you know, they don't have a Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
They have Fletcher, who's a good striker, but they don't have Robbie Keane.
But they don't have someone who scores almost every game.
Yeah, they don't score. Somebody who scores every second game.
I don't totally agree with this. I think we talked about it a bit last night.
But they do have a much better system for bringing through players. They actually bring players through in their own league. They have a few youngsters that are going places. I just think, in comparison to what Ireland are at the moment, we could be in a much worse position. You know what I mean? It is possible that we could be, you know, just finishing fifth in our group consistently, you know what I mean? When we look at Scotland, that under Levine, they were going nowhere. Much like we were in the last few months of Trump Tony's year, and you're like, it's just better to get him out. And you look, Gordon Strachan's come in and seems to breathe a bit of life into him. They beat Macedonia. Okay, they lost to Belgium, there's no shame in that. We're talking about good guys.
Yeah.
And then they've went and they beat Macedonia, which is quite good, I think, to go there. And I think they do have the potential to qualify, and I think they're massively underperforming because they do have good players. And I've discussed it before, it was Alex McLeish when he was managing, did a really good job.
Yeah.
And
when they beat France twice. And
yeah, they were close to qualify. Did they have India in that group as well? I think they lost it in the last game.
They got to the playoffs at one stage. I think it was from there. They got to the playoffs and were hammered by Holland, which is obviously going to happen.
Yeah,
that's Holland just win. But you heard of Holland even end up in the playoffs.
Yeah,
they just win qualifying games.
Talking about Deuteronomy, Wales, Coleman, Chris Coleman. Interesting. He forgot his passport there when they were travelling.
I made the point to you that we went on holiday, myself and Rory Easley, and I, as a human for myself, didn't forget my passport. Now, he's employed at a very large scale. And this isn't the first time he's had trouble of this nature. You know, he forgot his passport. Do you remember when he was
in
Spain?
Shooting night, yeah.
Yeah, he went out. We talked about this, before in the podcast. Just in case for anyone who doesn't know, he was out all night before a game.
Before a press conference. No, it was before a press conference.
I'm almost certain it was before a game.
No, it wasn't, because he was late. They cancelled the press conference. He was late for the press conference, yeah.
Okay. But he was out all night in a student bar. He looks young enough.
Yeah.
Could pull it off.
He looked younger now. He would have been a lot more tanned.
Yeah, looked younger. But basically, stayed out all night and claimed that his washing machine... Like, he was caught there, basically. And claimed that the reason he was there was that his washing machine broke at home and he couldn't sleep in his house. So he went out drinking all night.
But, I know I've done it, but I wasn't a manager.
You also broke your washing machine so you could go out drinking.
Yeah, I broke my washing machine by just pouring drink into it.
There's not logic behind any of that.
But the thing with Coleman is it's a hilarious story in the sense of, like, he's relative figure of ridicule sometimes already. It's just perfect in the sense of, like, he did that. No one noticed till they were on the plane. Ashley Williams said that, like, oh, we didn't know what was gone wrong. I'm sure it won't be too disruptive. You don't have your manager there, like, it's kind of disruptive.
They might do alright without him.
Losing any personnel of that staff.
Yeah, but if they didn't have him.
But think about it, like, you know, in any circumstance of any other job, if you just lost some personnel for no real reason, it would be disruptive.
Yeah, oh well, they lost both matches, and that's a shame.
Moron.
Yeah. Northern Ireland, heroic defeat against Portugal, and then a shambolic defeat against Luxembourg. Is Luxembourg's first win in qualifying since 1972?
Yeah.
We heard that stat yesterday.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Not only drew, Luxembourg drew with Northern Ireland in the
reverse.
Yeah, they win the match at Windsor Park. This was in Luxembourg, they won 3-2. Mm. It's, I mean, we talk about Chris Coleman. We talk about Craig Devine in Scotland was going nowhere. I don't understand Chris Coleman at Wales. They don't seem to be doing anything. The players seem to like him, which is the only saving grace, but they're not going anywhere as a team. Northern Ireland under O'Neill, Michael O'Neill, are not going anywhere.
Yeah.
They're, I mean, again, the players seem to like him, and they beat Russia recently, which was a good result, but it's not good enough, you know what I mean? Under Laurie Sanchez, they were almost competing. They beat Spain, they beat England. They
played the most fantastic football teams they'll ever play. The Laurie way.
They were productive, though. You can't argue that.
Oh, yeah,
that.
Look, I'm not arguing that. I'm just arguing that it stank up my eyes. But it's horrible, football.
Well, you know, David Healy banging in goals, scoring a hat-trick against Spain, wasn't
again,
he?
Not the personnel. The style of football was shite.
I know it was, but I just question why O'Neill's there.
Yeah,
they lost to Luxembourg.
Mm.
Nigel Worthington was there for a long time. They were going nowhere under Nigel Worthington. Everybody could see this. It was just nonsense. Mm. They were going nowhere. It's like, he's been in charge for 3 campaigns. It was like John Toshack managing Wales as well beforehand. You're like, you're not doing anything. Gary Speed went in and did a very good job at Wales. It was a very unfortunate circumstance, we know that. And Chris Coleman's kind of carried it on. But the Welsh FA, for instance, need to sit down at the end of the campaign and go, you're not bringing us you're not doing anything progress the team, I don't think.
Well, that's a huge factor as why we feel Trapattoni should go. I don't, like, look, as vilified as I said he became, we haven't regressed. And that's me and you were talking about this last night. That's not, we've regressed from where we were.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, when that starts happening, you start looking at your options.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's,
it is
as
dangerous to psych your manager during a qualifying campaign.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe not when you're totally out of
it. No, now it's fine, but yeah. I don't think...
If, no, you know, earlier, yeah.
Yeah,
of course,
done it, it's true. But I do think,
it's also dangerous not to have your manager fly with you to the game
general. I think Northern Ireland and Wales need to sit down and kind of look and say, where are we going with football nations?
I think a lot of countries have to do that. I think England and Ireland have to do that as well.
Well, I think England, I think Ireland are doing that now.
No, not to the same extent, but I think, you know, Ireland could really use an overhaul when it comes to most of, you know, the FAI could use an overhaul, the team, new manager. A lot of maybe players should be coming in at this stage.
Yeah,
as you're saying,
definitely.
No one to come into defence. You know, even as we're saying, the semi-professional league, we could use upping it. I don't know how you'd go about it. I'd let Brian Kerr do it.
Well, it was a professional league for a while, and clubs went bust, and people lost their jobs. So they don't really want to get down there. Okay, it doesn't have the fan base at the moment to do it, and we're not experts on it. And we don't, we love football, but we don't have an interest in it at all, really.
Mm.
You know, very rarely will we go to a game or watch a game on telly. We will occasionally watch one on telly, you know what I mean? But
and we're certainly trying as far as understanding grassroots. I mean, we're making an effort, but we're not very good at it.
Teams,
let's put it like that. We're
teams,
not very good at
obviously
it.
Obviously, teams are doing a very good job bringing players through, but we still rely on England to produce our best players.
Yeah, it's
more likely all of our players have gone to England. Very rarely does somebody from the League of Ireland actually get capped.
Yeah. That's you know, I don't think that's a good thing, it's worth saying, but, you know, I'd prefer it to be the other way, but, you know.
Yeah, but as I said, we will hopefully look at that when we get a new manager in. Whether it's, you know, people, you might have to sacrifice the next tournament or next two tournaments and say, maybe we should actually focus on developing some players.
Well, I think...
But then you're always afraid.
The fact that the next tournament is a bigger one,
and we have
a better chance of getting there, I think we have to focus on getting to that tournament, and then if that's a failure... Then complete rehaul.
So it's almost you go and you get a big name manager, somebody who has international experience and English, you know, and you spend the money. Trapattoni's on big money, and the back end's going to be there again. It's not really the FAI's money, it's investors in the FAI. So hopefully, we can get somebody who's got some experience. Because I don't like O'Neill.
We'll come back to all this.
Anyway, just some of the other internationals that happened. Holland and Italy have qualified. Holland drew with Estonia, though. They usually cruise to qualify without even dropping a point.
And they were very lucky to draw.
They scored a 93rd minute goal.
No way that was a penalty. I have to say. Absolutely dreadful decision by the referee. Or at least, if you want to say dreadful, very, very harsh. 94th minute in a game like that, kind of nothing in the challenge.
Yeah.
You know, and
not much even in it in terms of Holland are probably going to qualify anyway. Just let Estonia have the 3 points.
Yeah. Robben hit a classic Robben in that game. I'm not sure if you saw it. Cut inside, left foot, yeah. Far corner.
That's
excellent goal.
Does.
And yeah, Estonia really fought back. It was absolutely excellent.
They did go and lose the next game, though.
Yeah, they did.
So Holland did, qualified, yeah.
It was two screamers by Vasilev, the Estonian player. I have to say, like, it's worth checking out those goals. It's for his second one especially was beautiful. He miscontrolled it. Saw that he miscontrolled it, which led to a dink. Like, so, you know, Vorm had come out, ball kind of miscontrolled, and it just at the outside of his foot dinked it over. It was like, ah, he didn't mean that at first, but he really capitalised on not meaning it.
Vorm started goal, did he?
Yeah.
There's one for you. Mm. One for the record books.
And actually, you know what I meant to say as well? Van Persie was a bit of a shit in that game. He's carried over that streak from the Liverpool game where he was a bit of a shit. Where he, you know, he got the penalty in the 94th minute, slotted it away, and ran at the Estonia fans, kind of jumping like, yes,
amateur
Bayern. It was like, alright, easy. You know? They're like, in fairness, it's just harsh. I don't think, it's similar to, I don't think Van Persie dived. I was going to kind of have a go at that, maybe a little. But I think when it comes to things like that, like Müller in the Germany game, definitely dived against Faroe Islands. And I think something like that should not be... Like, I think they should get extra punishment. It's like if when my dad taught me football, if he had to start diving against me at that stage. You know, it's just not fair to do that. It's like, they're not as good. You know, Germany are going to beat Faroe Islands. Don't be diving in the box, you know? It's just not on. And same with Van Persie, he shouldn't be running at the crowd and right, scoring penalties.
Shouldn't be doing it. Should be just missing it. Italy qualified, Italy beat Bulgaria during the night. Gilardino scored. But Buffon made some absolutely world-class saves. Mm. I mean, he made three unbelievable world-like saves. And afterwards, I think he was interviewed by, or he was asked by the Italian press, is like, oh, you know, you made some incredible saves today, you're back on form. Because after the Federation's Cup, he, you know, people are saying, oh, is he really going to be Italy's number one? He was a bit shaky at times. And he kind of just turned around
and palmed that away with his big giant glove.
Well, he pretty much turned around and said, well, I never lost it. Why are you still surprised when I make a good save?
Mm.
He's a quality player. He's also come out this week and said that he faced depression when he was... Not, I suppose, younger, but in 2003, 2004.
Yeah, you said around 2003. And for me, it was like... That was when I watched you in your prime, and I loved you. You know, like that was my, you know, my clear memory of an absolutely amazing Buffon.
Mm.
You know, it would have been around the Champions League, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
the Champions League final. I guess.
Yeah. Well, he said 2003, 2004, so gone into Euro 2004 as well. He said that he used to drive to training and just not want to get out of his car. Which, but he
sad
said
stuff.
He saw help. He said he went, saw, talked to his friends, went to see a psychologist, and got help. Which is we might talk about it some other time, but. It is
something that has to really be introduced, and it's good to hear him come out and talk about that
kind of thing.
Because it's not talked about enough from players who've suffered from it.
Mm.
You know, it's not talked about enough, and it's not brought out enough that this is how I got help.
Yeah, it's you get it occasionally in England with Clark Carlisle.
Yeah,
coming out saying that, and this week he's going to come out. And, I know he's talks about a lot of the races and stuff, but this week he's come out and he said he's basically branded in his book. He's branded. The Ferdinand's, Anton Maria Ferdinand's, what was it? Shithouses.
He called them shithouses.
For not wearing the kick it out, you know.
Yeah.
Anti-racism, which is, you know, okay, it's their decision if they don't want to wear it, but, you know, footballers need to make these kind of issues aware. We know all about racism, but we need to shut it back. And I think depression is another thing for footballers, because sometimes, you know, we had to be very unfortunate with Gary Speed, as I said, but sometimes you have, footballers have nothing else outside of football, almost, and it's something we might talk about some other time. But
yeah,
we won't dwell on it too much now.
It's a subject that needs to be covered properly,
and not
chucked in passing. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So Italy beat them; they've qualified already. There was a cracker match. Another one, just what we thought we'd talk about, is Iceland Switzerland 4-4.
Yeah, it wasn't the more recent game.
No,
it was before that. But oh god, what a game!
It was Switzerland's just kind of well. So Iceland scored first. Switzerland cruised away, then scored four goals. Liechtenstein scored two.
Yeah, Liechtenstein. Yeah, Juve's Liechtenstein.
Another defender scored one of them.
Yeah, did the almost debut, I think.
Yeah, I was like, is it all going to be defenders to score?
Yeah,
and then
Switzerland.
But
it's kind of fitting because they don't really score goals.
Yeah,
so
and they don't. As we said earlier, they don't.
They don't concede.
This game was 4-4, and before this game, Switzerland had only conceded one. It's mental. Just be so angry in that game.
To throw away like at home.
Yeah. Well, as
4-1 lead.
As Shane was saying, yeah, they were up 4-1, and you know, Iceland made an absolutely phenomenal comeback with good Munson, like, just owning that game.
Well, he's got two wonderful. It was
He got a hat trick, and they're all pretty damn good.
Yeah, he scored the first though. Yeah,
he scored the first one. Beauty. Second one was an excellent turn, smashed the shot in.
And then last minute,
what, 92 minutes. Yeah, 2 minutes out of time. So it's 91 something. And just outside the box, you know, just curled it in far corner. What?
It was a Robin goal.
No, because Robin smashes those.
This was curled in on the left foot. Lovely.
He just bent one into the far corner and it was just absolutely beautiful. You're looking at it and you're like, how has that got in? That's just... Everything he touched was just beautiful, it seemed, in that game. And him and Sigurdsson had an absolutely excellent link-up throughout that game.
Two of the goals.
Keep an eye on that team, up and coming. You're next team. Belgium?
No.
Probably not, no.
They do have some good players, though.
Yeah.
Moving on just to briefly finishing off, actually. We've got that far already, haven't we? Testimonials.
Yeah.
We had one at the weekend with... Cine Petrov's testimonial.
Yeah. Well, not quite a testimonial because he was never there for 10 years.
Yeah, well
but a charity
match. Lovely scenes all around.
Whether it was
you know, the huge crowd chants for Petrov, or, you know, the old players you like to see, or Gabby Higbonhorst smashing into the One Direction lad, followed by him vomiting. Which I've never seen happen,
I've seen, I can't remember who it was, I think it might have been Gattuso. Who looked kind of uneasy and just went over the thing and got sick.
But that wasn't from what that was, which was basically, like, it wasn't a bad tackle from Igbanlahor, but it was, you know, people are like, how has this happened? It was like, and he actually, Igbanlahor got death threats from your usual teenagers and stuff like that. But he,
kids these days.
What it was with their death threats.
my day, just had a stick and a ball. They have death threats.
But you beat them around with a stick. Don't threaten. You just got on with it.
But basically, Igbanlahor, like, bumped into him so hard. It's basically his mass, his muscle.
He's a professional athlete.
Yeah. But, you know, your man, in fairness, your man plays, not lower league, but, like, below the conference, maybe one or two leagues. He actually has signed for a team.
Well, he signed for Doncaster, but it was all publicity stunt.
But he still plays. Like, I'm almost certain he plays a league or two.
Yeah, but how many games do you play as a professional pop star? You're traveling around the world.
True. My point being, though, that, look... The comparison of body, like, that was a bit of shattering tackle to the young fella. And, like, it was kind of funny because... It's kind of unfair on him because, like, look, he's a target in that sense. And it seems like Bonhoeffer is now as well. But there was a hilarious mixture of people laughing at the fact that he'd been broken up. And what I can only imagine was, like, a bunch of 10-year-old, 11-year-old girls screaming. And who couldn't have... I would imagine weren't there for the football.
Yeah.
We're there for the One Direction lad who ended up puking and leaving the pitch.
Sexy.
Wonder, is that going to be in the movie that's always on YouTube advertised?
Possibly, probably not, though, because the movie's already out.
you saw it, obviously. No vomiting scenes in it?
No, I didn't see it.
You're just a big fan of Morgan Spurlock, though. Love supersize me.
Fair play. Petrov played half an hour
with the Petrov, and then played with
Celtic
then.
But he ended on the losing team.
Yeah,
Dimitar Berbatov scored a half. Berbatov scored. He's just taking that seriously. Yeah. He's counting them.
And because I didn't see the game because it wasn't on. It was on BT, and I checked the score, and I was like, "Oh, Petrov scored! Ah, feckin' Martin Petrov." But Larsson did score, and my God, he still looks great in a Celtic jersey. At that lineup, I was just.
Do you think he could still do a job?
I could definitely still do a job. Took that pen away.
Actually, do you know what? Champions League,
get him in.
Get him in. I would take every single one of the players who played there. Genuine. Jay Gibbon playing and go for
the
Celtic.
One Direction guy.
Right.
The One Direction guy.
Put that goal.
But anyway, the point I wanted to make was get Larsson back there, right?
Yes.
In that gold jersey that he used to have, the away gold jersey. Beautiful, beautiful jersey. And he looked wonderful in that. And you know, Sweden, more the yellow, he'd be used to it. But
I'm not wearing this jersey. I'm not used to wearing this
one. That was the best of times for Celtic. Henrik Larsson in a golden jersey.
Yeah, I think he scored.
Gem.
He scored two against Blackburn wearing that jersey, remember?
Chris Sutton played? John Hartson?
Yeah, Chris Sutton was. John Hartson, no. And I kind of thought, that's really odd. Like, you'd expect John Hartson to have been there, but he was with Wales.
Backroom staff.
Lubomir Marasic was there. Coleman wasn't there.
So yeah. I'm sure they all could have
got a few free kicks.
I'm sure John Hartson could have skived off. He's like, well, Coleman's not here. I'm making up to the testimonial.
Pierre Van Hooydonk. Hooydonk scored.
Get the old Van Hooydonk, Bellamy, Di Canio, all these lads back that he's used to have.
Yeah. Well, Di Canio.
What?
Di Canio
played for Celtic. He's playing tonight.
Yeah, he's playing for Celtic. So I'm saying, get the back. He's playing for the AC Milan Legends. For Hull City, Steve Harper.
Hull City Tigers.
Former Newcastle Hull City Steve Harper.
In his Tiger. Newcastle testimonial against the AC Milan Legends.
AC Milan. I don't know Legend why. Pumas.
Tiger. But
the Newcastle Zebras.
We have to be doing that.
Up front.
Can we name out some players? Yeah, let's do that. It's like unwrapping Christmas presents.
Yeah, up front for the AC Milan Legends is Christian Vieri.
Yes,
and Paolo Di Canio, as he said. We were at the Ireland match, and it turned. We kept lumping balls up front, and it turned. Said, "We don't have Vieri and Bierhoff up front. Why are we doing this? We don't players are going to be winning the ball."
Imagine Vieri and Bierhoff are playing tonight. We wouldn't be doing this podcast if we didn't watch it. But yeah, I also turned to you in that game and said I miss Steve Finnan, which you know, in general.
Yes, although Steve, like, Coleman's a good lad, but...
Oh, yeah, well, he could play left-back, Stephen, and that was the thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, this team, I mean, for Newcastle, Alan Shearer's there, Andy Cole, Peter Beardsley, Keane Asprilla, Paul Kitson, Les Ferdinand. Look at the midfield, right? The midfield is beautiful. You got Rob Lee, Roberto Solano, David Ginola.
It's a very ugly midfield, actually.
For quality, like Alan Thompson, Keith Gillespie, Kieran Dyer, he'll be injured. Nicky Butt, Lee Boyer, and Joey Barton. Who allowed this to happen in a testimonial game?
Mark Van Bommel on the other side.
Oh God! Yeah. They should put the three of them.
Shouldn't be allowed on the same pitch.
Yeah, I know it's going to be.
Put Lee Carmel in there as well.
Also, in defence, Nikos Dabizas and Olivier Bernard hitting there. You know,
when you compare that to Alessandro Costa Curta
and Paolo Maldini.
The Milanese team.
Will Steve Harp.
Taibbi.
Because Shea Given and Pavel Sterncheck are on the Newcastle 11. Will Steve Harper start?
Oh, well, you know, I'd say give him a get his game. In true Newcastle tradition, give him a get his game.
Imagine he didn't play.
The manager going through the teams. I don't even know who did it. Manager? Shearer, I don't know.
He just got it, like, it would start off, it'd be one of those, like, oh no, let the talented guy have a go for a minute, and then they just kind of push him to the side, and he ends up like walking out on his own testimonial.
But it's just in true New York Constitution. Oh no, shake him.
So you get your game eventually, man. Do you think he'll just snap Steve Harper and he'd be like, how do you like it, Shay? How do you like sitting on the bench for the entire game?
This is the only reason why he had this testimonial. Yeah. He was like, Shay Given, you're going to be there. You're going to be on the bench. Yeah.
Shay Given's dying for a game, though. He's like, I need a fucking first game. Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty lovely. Good game, I imagine. I'm sure we'll
follow
analyse the ins and outs of it. If Christian Vieri bangs in a hat-trick, I won't shut up about it. So
all headers as well. The halfway line.
loving Steve Harper gets beaten by a hat-trick of headers from the halfway line as on testimonial.
Do you know he should have got Alonso just dropped?
They should have got Alonso just for halftime
entertainment.
Just lobbing the ball.
Well, I'm sure Vernon Kay might be up to something. So.
Manuela, sure, she has nothing else to do now. They're Italian.
I wonder if she's got a job. Didn't say no.
Yeah, they didn't.
I can't imagine her not. Like, she's a translator.
Like, sure, just in case.
Yeah, well, that's what I said earlier about Ferguson.
We could be another Italian.
Christian Vieri.
Capello.
I'd take Christian Vieri as a manager. You know that? Just I would. I'd take him.
I'd take him as a player.
Yeah.
Get him in there. Cascarino, so.
Just no doubt about that.
Just call him Chris Vieri.
Ah, oh, dear.
Chris Vieri.
Vieri. He's a Vieri character, that.
moving on. Wells is over to move on to. It's the end of the podcast.
We're going home.
If you want to get in touch, the email address is the12thmanpodcast@hotmail.com. On Twitter @12thmanpodcast. Go on the Facebook page as well. Just Google the 12th Man Podcast. And get on there and have a little look around and see what's up there. Some videos of, or some pictures of, Brady scratching his head.
There is. He's very confused. There's a Vine up there from my own Vine account of, what it felt like watching the RTE panel last night. There'll be a few more bits. If we can find Glenn Johnson's toilet seat mishaps.
That sounds terrible. The new reality show. Glenn Johnson's toilet seat mishaps.
That's what they,
imagine, he didn't make the World Cup squad.
imagine the headline of Glenn Johnson shits on toilet seat.
Johnson, a BQ horror.
But anyway, there's also there's a few lovely bits up there, so check them out. There'll be more in the upcoming days as we talk about what manager we would like, and
as we pick up the remains of our lives.
We pick up the pieces after a terrible international week. Thank you, Declan Merritt.
Moving on up.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Premiership now.
Take a mess of those. I don't care about that. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for myself as well. We'll see you next week.
Not. I am the one and only. Chapter 7 is a fold-out t-shirt attached to the book that you wear, but it's still part of the book.
That's really so
you have to wear like a book on your back.
It's all about the gold award-winning podcasts.
This whole area here is no man's land. Nobody can go in here.
Sorry, lads.
Sorry,
I'm
lads.
I'm pretty good at hoofing it.
Delicious.
It sounded like you might have played Snape.
Yeah, Alan Rickman.
Pop tart. Delicious pop tart.
The 12 Man Podcast featuring
Alan Rickman
for one word.
Welcome to the 12 Man Podcast. Pop tart. We can freestyle that one, guys. Look at my crazy dance. Don't go chasing.
I would be getting.
Don't go chasing waterfalls, lads.
Just stick to the rivers of the.
Or elephants. Because they'll turn around and trample you.
Yeah, don't go chasing elephants.
Don't go chasing elephants.
It's reckless. You're probably going to die.